an accepted or professional rule of action or conduct, a fundamental, primary, or general law of truth from which others are derived, a doctrine or tenet, a distinctive ruling opinion. Andre Cohen and AM Horizons Training Group would like to welcome you to today's principle.
Hi, this is Andre Cohen, and I want to say thank you so much for joining us here at AndreCohen.com and at OrganizationalLift.org. And so if you're looking for those online classes, if you're looking for CEUs, Organizational Lift is definitely the place to go. What you'll find on this particular presentation is a rebroadcast of one of our previous sessions. And so we hope that you are able to learn, to live, and to lead given these principles that you'll find in this particular presentation. So without further ado, we'll go ahead and we'll start the program. And I just want to remind you that if there's ever anything we can do for you, please give us a call. You can contact us at amhorizons.com, andrecohen.com, or organizationallift.org. And our number is 651-998-9376. And here is today's principle. So just if you don't mind turning that just a little bit, just so you know, I will try to make up for the time so that I honor those who will come behind me. So I'm a classroom teacher. I spent 8 years as the diversity coordinator, cultural coordinator, affirmative action officer for Anoka County. I'm not sure if folks know where Anoka County is, but if you do, thank you for your prayers. I enjoyed my time there. I currently am a teacher and professor in a number of universities in the metro area. And so that's the platform that I come to you from. And so I'll get right into this. And so here's the essential question. Is Santa Claus white? Right? So, if you look on my Facebook post, you will see that there is this feed, and it's the longest feed that I've ever had on my Facebook post. It's over 225 responses to this conversation about Santa Claus and Christ being white. And so my essential question is, why is that such a threatening, why is that such an important thing for people to discuss about a fictional character, that being Santa Claus, being a real character who's been fictionalized that actually captures our attention? Why is that so threatening? It is so threatening because the icon of Santa actually is at the pinnacle of what Dr. Alcante was just talking about. That white supremacist model is hinged upon the indoctrination of both children of color and white children. One of the things that, and I'll display this in my piece, that I also think is very problematic for white people is the concept of white. And the unifying factor of whiteness is built on one premise. And what is the one premise that whiteness is built on?
Skin color.
Skin color?
We own it.
We own it. Sameness. That this whole group of people are in fact the same. Who were the slave owners' contemporaries? Who did they go to plays with, have lunch with, have dinner parties with? Who did they have engagements with? White people? Are you sure about that? Who did they go to operas with?
Rich people.
Other?
Well,
slave owners. If you weren't a slave owner, you weren't going to the opera with the slave owners. One of the things that whiteness says is that all white people are equal. And in fact, we know by listening to white people that that's not true. Because what do white people call white people who don't measure up to the level of sophistication that most white people think that they should? We call them white trash. We call them rednecks. We call them Hoosiers. right? So we have all these derogatory names for white people who don't measure up. And so when we talk about this concept of race, we have to bring that part of the conversation as a part of what we talk about. Because what race does is it creates obstacle illusions. Obstacle illusions. Things that create artificial barriers between having authentic relationships between human beings. Obstacle illusions. And those obstacle illusions only can happen when we operate within a particular kind of context. All right? 1776, what happens? Declaration of Independence, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, right? So we have the Declaration of Independence. In 1863, what happens? 13th Amendment. The Emancipation Proclamation is signed January 1st, giving what to whom? Freedom to the slaves. Now, one thing I want you to do from this day forward is I want you to talk about those individuals who were in the system of slavery different, because they were not slaves, but they were people in the system of slavery. And why is that important to make that distinction that they were people in the system of slavery? Why is that important, an important distinction to make?
Slavery
is
not thought of as equal.
Slaves are things. And as long as we continually think about people as things, we don't mind victimizing them.
Wow. Andre has shared a number of great concepts and tips. We want to take this moment to highlight that these tools are aimed in breaking the back of racism, sexism, and oppression. The only way to do this is through love and understanding. Blame, fault, and guilt never move people in a positive direction. As a matter of fact, it actually creates stronger, faster, and more effective haters of equity and justice. Through effective communication, we guide conversations with humility, honesty, and humor. Our purpose is to reconnect people to the dignity and honor in being human. Now back to our session.
Think about the system of domestic violence, right? One of the things that the perpetrator does is he dehumanizes the victim of that interaction between him and the other person, because he wants to change them into a thing. That's why our military is not supposed to fraternize with the enemy, because it's hard to kill somebody that you know. And so context becomes extremely important. And a lot of times, I don't know if you've gone to a cultural competence training, and I think those things are excellent. I think they miss one important piece, which is the context, because context actually drives behavior. And so in 1863, liberty was given to those people who were in the system of bondage. 1924 is important. Why? Native Americans get the right to be American citizens. 1924, we'll pause for the irony. Right? 1920, women get what? The right to vote. 1964? Civil Rights Act that did what? Ended segregation and defined discrimination as a legal process, right? So if I'm walking down the hall and one of my coworkers swats me on the butt and we're not on the softball team together, what do I do? Sexual harassment, right? So I file something with HR, and then that takes down this whole legal path, because that is discriminatory according to 1964. Context is everything. 1978. Why is 1978 important? Because Native Americans get the right to religiously practice the way they want without any legal ramifications. 1978. We'll pause for that irony as well. And then 1990, the Americans with Disabilities Act, and later we can talk about equal marriage amendments and DOMA and all those kinds of things. But context is everything. So when I think about 1863 to 1964, people who were held in bondage in 1863 now get equal rights under the law everywhere, and other folks get equal rights in 1964. How long is that? 101 years. And people said, Martin, you're moving too fast. So in 101 years, what kinds of institutions are set up in that 101 years? Universities are set up. What else? Grocery stores, industry. We've gone through the Industrialized Revolution in that period of time. So between 1863 and 1964, one could argue that every institution that was developed was a racist institution. And so when people talk about, systemic oppression or systemic stuff, and they say, well, it's been undone. I got to tell you, we got a lot of work to do to make up the ground of 101 years. And so when I look at particularly African Americans, I'm not concerned with their current state. I just know they need 101 years to catch up. Unfortunately, some of us don't have that much time. One of the things that we also have to understand, again, context is everything. And so if this becomes our context, this 101 years becomes our context, then that helps us to explain our culture. And culture is made up of two parts. It is our values and it's our artifacts, right? The things we can see and the things that we can't see. What was it that did the Titanic end, the unsinkable ship? What was it that actually did that ship in? It was an iceberg. But did they not see the iceberg?
It's confidence that it couldn't be sunk.
Okay, so also is the confidence that it couldn't be sunk. But they saw the iceberg. Why didn't they just move around the iceberg?
How we work. We cause, teach, and inspire people to think. We ask them to find solutions to their group's problems. I know that sounds nice. The truth is that we can come to your organization and do a great presentation. But at the end of the day, I'm going home, and you'll be left to deal with each other. No blame, fault, or guilt. We want you, above all else, to think and think critically about diversity issues. None of us currently living set up the systems of racism, sexism, or prejudice. So blaming and pointing fingers is a waste of time. Our trainings spend more time looking at our commonalities than placing fault or blame. As we move forward, it's important to bring everyone along. We look forward to the journey ahead. Now, back to Andre.
So they were trying to break a record. They were trying to save time. What they saw was the tip of the iceberg. And it was actually the part of the iceberg that they could not see that ripped the hull, right? And so all too often when we talk about this concept of race, what we see physically is such a small part of what is truly true about an individual. And I will tell you, you will not get to see my values if we're not in relationship to each other. And so the tip of the iceberg becomes stereotypes. TV, movies, news media outlets love the stereotypes, the artifacts, because they can sell that back to us either in our greatest dreams and ambitions or in our worst fears. And so when we talk about personal accountability, what we also have to understand is that culture is based on the context. So in Minnesota, there are certain behaviors that we have here that they do not have in Belize.
That's true.
What kind of things do we do here in Minnesota that they do not do in Belize? Wear parkas. Shovel snow. Ice fish.
Yeah.
Winter carnival. Right? No, they might have passive aggressive people in she said Minnesota nice. Right? So the context determines the culture. And simply put, culture is the methods that individuals are using to deal with their context. And so we have a racist system. Therefore, our methods of dealing with that context as a default are what? Racist. Although we individually may not necessarily be exhibiting or trying to support those things, but the methods of dealing with this particular context through this culture lends themselves to us participating in the system of racism unless we are not. And this is how we change that. Social workers, what are the two determinants of human behavior?
Nature, nurture.
Okay, that's one way to think about it. Past behavior. Okay. Emotions and thoughts. Emotions and thoughts. Like you'll ask a kid to do something and they'll say, "I don't feel like it." Anybody ever heard that? Right? So they emotionally don't feel like it. So thoughts and emotions dictate people's behavior. And so if we look at the 1964 Civil Rights Act, it defines discrimination for us. It tells us what it is. It tells us what to do about it. It gives us guidelines on how to decrease racism and discrimination in our organizations and in the world, particularly in the United States. What we don't necessarily understand is that bigotry is an emotional state. Bigotry is an emotional state. We oftentimes think that it's a mental construct or that if I give people enough information that that will change them. Has anyone ever had a sad friend? If you gave that friend an Excel spreadsheet, charts, graphs, and statistics, how does that change them?
Depresses them.
It actually depresses them, right? And so information does not change bigotry. If bigotry is an emotion, what emotion do we need to change it?
Love.
Prejudice is a thought process. I was taught that prejudice was bad. I believe that prejudice is good. It will save your life. Mm-hmm. It's 11:30 at night. I'm walking down the street. Six guys are coming towards me. What decision do I make?
Across the street,
because I'm not running anywhere, right? So across the street, and you say that's a wise decision given that context. But what prejudiced people do is they take a good decision out of its original context and try to apply it as a strategy for life. So now I'm in the Mall of America using that same strategy out of context, and now I seem foolish, right? So prejudice is a thought. And so emotions plus thought dictate behaviors. So why do we consistently still have discrimination? Because it was outlawed in 1964, but it seems to keep creeping up. Why is that? The law's job is to take care of discrimination. Whose job is it to take care of bigotry and prejudice? It's our job. So why do we still have discrimination? Because we're not doing our job.
It takes a long time to undo everything that, you know, previous generations have.
Yes, I don't disagree. I don't disagree.
Have thought, trained us. One example is it was illegal to even intermarry in many states in this country, I think, until 1967.
Actually, 72.
Was it 1967?
No, 67. 72.
72.
11 verses,
all the generations before that have really negative connotations about that. And a lot of those people are still alive. They were our grandparents and our parents.
And what I would suggest is that it is our job as individuals in our sphere of influence to make sure that we're checking folks on their bigotry and on their prejudice so that we minimize, right? So I can't undo 101 years worth of work, but I can undo 42. That's how old I am. So I'm going to do my 42-year part in the struggle. And so when we think about race, one of the things I talked about it, in fact, being an obstacle illusion. Please raise your hand if family is a value to you. Raise your hand.
Please raise your hand if love is important to you or of value to you. Please raise your hand if life is important to you. Please raise your hand if care for children is important to you. Obstacle illusions are created to keep us divided so that we will not recognize what is most important, that we won't realize our significance, our belonging, and our safety. And I believe that those are the three things that all human beings are striving and working towards, and that race is an obstacle illusion that prevents us from having authentic relationships with each other. My name is Andre. Thank you.
Your name is Andre. Thank you.
An accepted or professional rule of action or conduct. A fundamental, primary, or general law of truth from which others are derived. A doctrine or tenet. A distinctive ruling opinion. Andre Cohen and AM Horizons Training Group would like to welcome you to today's principle.